I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is Tech Central's TCS Plus, the business technology show, where we speak to people doing interesting things in business IT. And we're going to be talking about risk mitigation strategies for identity theft today, an important topic, particularly in the South African context, I think. And to do that, I'm joined remotely by two guests. One, I think, is in Johannesburg. The other one I know is in Cape Town. Christian Swanepoel is from Cyber One Solutions. Christian is security architect at Cyber One. And Christian is joined today by Marco Wagner. And Marco is co-founder and chief technology officer at Identify. Guys, welcome to the show. Thanks for making the time. Marco, I'm going to start with you, if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit about Identify, when the company was founded, what it focuses on, how the relationship with Cyber One Solutions came about.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thanks for having us, Duncan. It's really nice to be here. So Identify, so Gur and myself, Gur is our CEO, Gur Geva. We roughly in 2017 met each other in the market, and the way that the story started was Gur had a friend, and that friend, one day the friend's nanny was walking in a very prominent park in Cape Town, and she was walking with a pram with a child in it, and at that stage there was a person who approached her in the park, and he offered her 40,000 rand, a bag of cash, and he said to her, just walk with me a little bit, and then we split paths, I'll take the pram, you take the cash. And fortunately, the nanny didn't follow through. But it sparked a lot of conversations, and Gur started doing research around money laundering and fraud. And we were seeing that you could essentially buy a child in South Africa, and that child can get sold off as an orphan in Europe. And all of the money to do that was being washed predominantly in South Africa. And we felt we had to do something about it. So we met up and we had this radical transformative purpose, and we said we want to stop identity fraud in South Africa and Africa. We started ideating it, and long story short, we came up with the idea that we have to prove that you're a living human being on the other side of a device. And we also had to authenticate identity documents, and we had to do all of this remotely. And the reason for the remote at the time was we were working with Standard Bank, who's also a great strategic partner of us. And we realized there was an opportunity in the market where people who were living in less fortunate circumstances had to travel to banks, and they couldn't remotely open up bank accounts. And with them, we launched the MIMO product at that stage, which allowed people to sit at home and use their smartphone and onboard remotely without having to go to the bank and only to get their ID document stolen. And from there, it's just obviously escalated.
Well, give us an idea then of how
cyber.
Sorry, Mark, I was just going to ask if you could maybe give us an idea of the size of the business today, where it's focused, and who some of your clients are.
Yes. So today, we are spread across South Africa and Africa. We're in about six territories in Africa, and we are currently predominantly working with the financial sector, so tier one banks. We're also working with M&O, so tier two level as well, and our technology is deployed in mobile apps, web solutions, and our staff complement has also grown, and we've been very fortunate to close a Series A a couple of years ago and some strategic investments.
Okay, excellent. And headquartered down in Cape Town?
Yes, headquartered down in Cape Town, staff complement. We have some people in Joburg and Durban and so forth, but predominantly it's a Cape Town office.
Great. Well, Christian, you're no stranger to Tech Central and the TCS Plus show, but for those who haven't met you before, tell us a little bit about yourself and the role of Cyber One Solutions. What do you guys do in the market?
So thanks, guys. So I come in from a security architecture perspective. When we talk about complex solutions, how to integrate it between, you know, those different platform experiences that you have inside organizations, be it from consumer, be it from partner, be it from, you know, internal services that you offer to your own staff members, and kind of, you know, cohesively looking at how do you integrate, how do those use cases fit into industry standards and policies, adhering to compliance and regulatory aspects. Now, where Cyber One comes into the conversation is we're large provider of focused cybersecurity solutions to the same set of customers, for instance, that iIdentify focuses on, you know, fintech, financial banking, telco, but then obviously we extend that expertise from a cybersecurity perspective also into the mid-market and SME sizing and public sector. So quite a broad, expansive portfolio, but again, our focus on cybersecurity allows us to touch all of the components that a business typically would require to protect against these cyber, you know, criminals and the threat actors and threat vectors that that are used to either conduct fraud, either do data exfiltration, or either keep organizations at ransom. And that's where our speciality and expertise lie.
Okay. So we're going to be talking about identity theft today. But before we delve into that discussion, Christian, just explain the nature of the relationship between CyberOne and Identify. How do you guys work together?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, Identify being a proudly South African software vendor, you know, that's technology that they created and obviously they released to the market and they want consumption on it. Now, as a integrated service reseller that we are, we obviously provide that expertise, how to integrate and implement and how to facilitate that use cases that they specialize on and integrate that into the business use cases that are actually the required thing to solve for, right? And how to also navigate the, you know, both from a technical and from a, let's call it a compliance and a regulatory perspective, how do you regulate, how do you adhere to those regulations and compliance aspects to make sure that from a posture perspective that those organizations, our partners and, you know, customers that consider us their partners, that we can make sure that, you know, at the end of the day, the solution is actually, number one, working correctly and adding a clear business value, where that context is all around risk reduction and in this case, fraud reduction as well.
Okay. So Christian, just staying with you for a moment or two longer, if I may, can you maybe unpack for us what some of the current trends are around identity theft and why it's a growing concern for businesses?
Yeah, so, I mean, in the market, it's now become such a, it's become a norm, right? When we consider threats and threat vectors that are, that organizations are facing and we as individual citizens are also facing, we've become quite accustomed to the fact that it's not going away. It's permanently there. And every single organization that we deal with from a customer perspective, our customers, are constantly being bombarded by either localized threats, international threat actors, you know, theoretical internal threat actors, fraud attempts, everything. It's happening across the enterprise. We find that every single threat is actually also then, you know, uniformly connected towards specific targeting of data or information, and then or usage of identity information for the purposes of fraud and or, you know, further data exfiltration. But that identity conversation becomes quite key to most of the breaches and risks that are actually in utilization today. Yes, it's very easy to go and reference, you know, the MITRE attack playbook and try and make sure that from a CVE known vulnerability perspective that your firewalls and that your systems are up to date from a patch perspective. But if we actually look at what those threat actors are doing and what they're trying to achieve, so what they're trying to do with that either the data that they've exfiltrated or the identity that they're now trying to compromise. And it's typically financially orientated. They're either after a consumer's financial information or financial transactions, or they want to exfiltrate financial information or financial, you know, value from the organization. And it's all identity connected. So, I mean, it's so topical that, and I had this conversation last week with someone where they said, it feels like we're back in the early 2010s, early 2005s, where identity was a big topic. And then, you know, 15 years later, we're back at it again, where identity still remains so core and key to the concept of internal staff verification, internal contractors, third parties, and now more importantly, the consumer aspect of it. And it's all come full circle, really.
Well, Marco, let me bring you in here, because Identify has developed some technologies that helps in this fight against identity theft and identity compromise. Now, I believe you've developed something called 4D Liveness, which can play a big role in this area. Tell us about that software and how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So Liveness is one of the big components in our solution, and I'll run through some of the other components as well.
Sure.
But essentially, the idea that we came up with is if you want to genuinely prove that someone is present, and let me explain that for a second. Traditional liveness technologies will prove that a human being is alive and they're three-dimensional, and there's quite a couple of products out there in the market. But what we bring to the table is we essentially generate a unique series of colors from our servers that we play through the device, and we flash it on a person's face. And that's unique by bringing in the element of time. So what that does is it flashes on the person's face, we record it, and then we play it back to our servers. Now, let's say you, for instance, record a video clip because you want to compromise Christian's identity, and you record a video clip and you try and simulate these flashing colors. You won't be able to replay it if you record it on a Monday, on a Thursday, or even simulate it, because the reality is it's unique at that point in time. It was generated for that specific attempt. So we couple that with essentially the defense against deepfake technology, and that's become way more prominent with the AI boom, where people are generating avatars that can wink and blink and talk, and you can overlay audio and literally inject that into the chipset, either into a browser, on a machine, or with a phone. And our technology defends 100% against that. We are very aimed at stopping deepfakes. So four-dimensionality actually proves that you're not only a living being, you are a living being at that point in time or the other end of the device. So liveness is one component. Yeah.
No, sorry. I was just going to ask about AI, because I mean, generative AI has become the big focus in the last couple of years. But is generative AI making identity theft much easier?
So generative AI, definitely. It's it allows attackers to generate fake videos, overlay movements, overlay voiceovers, all those type of things much easier. And also these tools have now, because they're so prevalent, it's become much easier to use technology to inject them into a Google Meet or a Zoom or into a phone, because people are experimenting with this. They want to do it. They want to have an avatar of themselves on a meeting. Mm-hmm. They want a virtual representation that can be out there to represent them. So I think we've been ahead of the curve because we've been working on this technology for years and years. And that's why a lot of the concepts that we're seeing that's coming out now was actually just being practiced behind closed doors. But with the AI boom, it was released into the wild. And now if you're using, unfortunately, if you're using less effective liveness technology, then you're very much compromised, much easier.
So, Marco, sorry, I interrupted you. You were telling us about the other components of the software solution. Please expand on that.
Yeah. So we don't only do liveness, we also do face match, and then we also are one of the first companies, well, the first company that pioneered the integration with the Department of Home Affairs. So essentially the way that the solution works is after we've proven that you're a living human being, we've only proven that you're a living human being, how do we prove that you are who you really claim to be? Mm-hmm. And the way that we do that is we allow you to capture your identity document, and we support thousands of documents from across the world. We also do authentication checks on those documents because, again, with AI, there's a lot of deepfake documents. So people use Photoshop, they overlay faces, so we defend against those attacks. And then very importantly, we've got calibrated face match engines that then will match your liveness selfie against the document, but then also against the government authority if there's an image available. And that we call our golden triangle, or our triangle of trust. And this powers our onboarding product. And then we also have a product where we then subsequently authenticate you. So how do I say that Duncan is still who he claimed to be 2 weeks ago? And that is a product that's being used by millions of South Africans as we are sitting and speaking here. And that's okay. Literally just doing a selfie. And we can prove that you are still the same person you were on a Monday. We can prove that you're the same person on a Thursday.
Must be a little bit of a war of attrition, though, with the bad guys who are always trying to break the system and get one up on you. Are you having to? Is it a war against them? I mean, do you have to make changes to your software on a fairly regular basis to keep up with what the bad guys are doing?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot of research that goes in through red teams. We've got internal and external teams. And the idea behind that is to obviously experiment with the tools that are out there. So it can be aspects such as doing research on new tools that are coming out on app stores or Google Play Store. And you would be amazed about the number of tools that are on there. Also dark web. So people sell tools to compromise liveness detection software from across the globe. So we look at those trends and then we try and build that in right down to security on a device level. Of course, leveraging the capability that handset manufacturers and operating system manufacturers gives us, and then also browsers and just using every single tool that we can. And then we also sprinkle some magic on that's part of our intellectual property.
Proprietary. We won't go there. Christian, from Cyber One's perspective, what are the challenges that businesses are facing when trying to deal with this scourge of identity theft? And what are they doing right? What are they doing wrong?
Well, I think we need to start at one common acceptance. We have a process in South Africa where there was attempted, at least mandated to our telcos, and that was the RICA process, right? And the reason for that was to try and connect cell phone activity, or at least mobile activity, towards a actual identity that owns that cell phone number. Still today, years later, SIM swaps and theoretical phishing that actually takes place on mobile devices renders that process completely completely null and void. We know that 2FAs via OTP can be intercepted. Second factor tokens, for those that don't know. We know that SIM swaps take place from every single telco that we actually deal and transact with, is that that's still a problem, even though that there's a process in place. We know that you can go buy a 20 Rand already recut SIM card at a taxi rank and anywhere in South Africa. So that process is kind of failing the reason why it was initially initiated. And now if you think about that factor of authentication and how often inside your daily life that is actually utilized, it's a very common thing, right? A second factor token that's sent to your phone to verify that you are who you say you are. But suddenly, if that method is actually so easily compromised, how can organizations then validate specific actions taken or requests to the organization? So that's the business problem, right? Is how do you get closer to your customer from that verification perspective? Verification of my customer is requesting me to do something. The customer is no longer going into a store to do activities. They're sitting on their mobile phones. We're seeing this not only in South Africa, but if you take the context of Africa as a whole, branches, both in telco and financial sectors, are closing down. People don't want to go into branches. People are becoming more mobile. So now you're sitting with that problem. I mean, that's where the industry is transitioning to. You can try and bulk against it as much as you want. It is happening and it will happen. It's what the consumer needs and what the consumer requires. Now you have this problem, right? And typically as security professionals, we're typically dragged along as a afterthought. You know, a business goes and they, a lot of our customers, business goes and says, right, this is the next big thing. We need to do this. This is the only way that we stay relevant as an organization. Then they, as an afterthought, say, oh, okay, security officers and security teams, please can you make sure that transaction is actually, you know, that process is actually secure and validated. And that's where the problem comes into, is if you don't have the ability from a use case perspective to offer those types of user verification to the deep ingrained level that iIdentify does, then you're losing touch with your customer base. And also from a compliance perspective, you're opening up yourself as an organization to a lot of theoretical open breaches and open areas of risk. Now, the other thing that becomes also vitally important, and Mark also touched on this, a point in time at this, let's say at inception, at onboarding, where a identity is onboarded into a specific organization to consume their services, that does not secure that specific identity for the rest of their lives. So an ongoing process of continuous verification and validation is actually needed to ensure that that consumer of your technology remains secure. Then lastly, and again, business will tell you this is the more important part, is that consumer experience. Business and consumers want that to be seamless. They don't want to notice that you're putting them through more hoops and more measures to secure them. They want seamless integration and just-in-time access as and when they need it on their own terms and demands. Now, again, as security professionals, we're going and saying, guys, but we need checks and balances. We need to validate and make sure that we keep this transaction or activity secured. But business needs to move at a more agile pace. Now, if you take all of those problem sets and you connect it towards what iIdentify offers, they are one of the most unique companies in the localized space as well as international space. And we'll possibly touch on that topic as well a bit later as to why that geographic location is also vitally important to this. But they're one of the most dynamic companies when it comes to ensuring that that customer engagement process is actually not affected. The customer doesn't notice that they are actually in a process of where their interaction with the organization is more secure and that less risk is actually applied to them.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say there. And Marco, maybe I could get your views on this. I mean, what organizations, I guess, don't want to do is introduce so much friction into the process that it starts to annoy the customer who starts to see this as a grudge, something they have to go through but don't really want to because it takes a lot of their time. What are some of the strategies you guys employ to reduce that friction in the identification process?
Yeah, so one of the things is we've got a saying internally. We always say, like, the company is our customer, but the end user is our real customer because we are defending their identity and we are ultimately putting the technology in their hands through a proxy. So some of the strategies that we have implemented is we meet the customer where they are at. So our technology is on desktop browsers, it's mobile devices, it's device agnostic, it's we've got WhatsApp channel integrations even, and it's mobile browser. So wherever you need the technology, it can be deployed there. The other thing is the technology is deployed as Lego pieces to be non-disruptive for integration. So it plugs into existing mobile apps. So a customer or an end user doesn't have to download another mobile app to go and verify themselves. It's inside of their banking or telco experience and in their day-to-day use cases and flows that they operate with. Our footprint is also very small. Just in terms of size. So that's something that people don't always think about. But people in South Africa uninstall mobile apps before they sometimes get onto public transport for fear of being held ransom to do a e-wallet transfer while I'm on a taxi, as an example. So now you've got people uninstalling software. They get to work, they reinstall the mobile app, they uninstall it again. It's like back and forth. So, and they've got limited cash flow to buy data and to install those apps. So we take all of those things into account, and it obviously comes with the empathy of being a South African-born company. You know, people in Europe might not have that local empathy. So those are the type of things. Network, we're very sensitive to network as well. And then if you think about the liveness process in itself, Other technologies will ask customers with on-screen prompts to essentially wink or blink or move and make it an interactive process where we simply ask a person to put their face in an oval and we do the rest. Mm-hmm. Super fast, super sleek. Because we think about things like, can people actually read all the text? Do they understand the English that we're printing out there? So we'll also have language packs, and I mean, I can go on the flexibility, but a lot of research is going in there, and we even go so far that we do thousands of local tests where we ask people to come and test our technology and give us a real-time feedback, and then we do over-the-shoulder recordings to see how customers interact with new updates.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I imagine that financial services is a key industry customer of yours, but yes. I imagine there's some other use cases, some other industries that perhaps we don't think of off the top of our heads when we think identity. What are some of the other key industries where you've deployed your biometric solutions, and what is it being used for?
Yeah, so one thing that normally takes people by surprise is we've got a deployment with a prominent mine in the DRC. And the challenge that they had was they've got employees and they provide staff benefits to those employees, particularly, let's say, for instance, a medical clinic that's on site at the mine. But what people do is they just swap out their employee cards, their access cards, and then everyone rocks up at the medical facility. And therefore, the medical facilities gets abused. So our technology has been deployed there in the DRC with a very, very large user base. And what they do is when you become a new employee there, HR enrolls you through a biometric process. And then essentially when you go to the clinic, you have to scan your face again or at the school or similar. And that allows that mine to ensure that their employees are put first and there's no fraud to accessing those services or that it gets abused.
Okay. So how does Identify integrate with the existing IT systems of its clients? Because there must be I'm imagining there's quite a lot of integration work that takes place. Just maybe unpack that in some detail.
Yes. So the vision from day one when we designed this was developers should be able to just pick up the technology, integrate it, copy and paste code, and okay. just get it up and running. So long story short, we've got mobile SDKs and web SDKs, and customers plug this into their mobile apps. But we, from a functionality perspective, it can be integrated in less than 20 minutes. We've proven this with some of our clients. And then a lot of people would expect us to have a large suite of APIs, but the way that we designed the solution is we only have two APIs. So you integrate with two APIs. The one is actually voluntary if you want to. So it's one API. You plug in the SDK within 20 minutes. And then we also built a low-code, no-code solution to meet, again, like the SME market. Maybe you don't have that engineering capacity or you don't have a mobile presence, but you've got a large web presence. So we've built a no-code, low-code solution there where essentially we host our whole solution on the internet and you just you can distribute links through WhatsApp or through email or SMS, whichever platform you want to use. And a customer simply clicks on that link on their mobile phone or on their desktop or laptop, and the web browser opens up, does the journey, and essentially that customer is authenticated.
Okay. So, Christian, let me bring you back in here. If you don't mind, maybe take us through where CyberOne comes in terms of the role that cybersecurity can play in protecting people's identities and mitigating the problems we've been chatting about today.
Okay, so I think let me start then by also contextualizing something I mentioned earlier around this, you know, geopolitical scenario that we have. Africa, right? We're in Africa. Africa is a unique beast. On its own, if you take into context IT cybersecurity over the last 10 years, a lot of the technologies and solutions typically are born in first world contexts and in first world problem sets and use cases, and then it filters down into you know, Southern Africa and the rest of Africa. And then we have to kind of modify those use cases to work for us in our context. And this is normalized in the industry quite often. Now, we've seen that in that also happened with liveness detection and identity verification for that matter. And what we noticed was, for those technologies born in, to say it plainly, born in European and or United States and US markets, even the one in the Eastern markets, those technologies are built around facial detection and parameter detection, not based on our cultural definition that we have in Africa. This is common knowledge. I mean, even large companies like Apple have come out publicly and said that their darker complexion detection does not work as well. Okay, it's because their technology was not built around actually that geographic denomination. Now, that's the thing, and I think, Marco, you can also touch on this a bit later, is that's one of the massive values where I identify their technology sets and their detection algorithms are actually built on our people. It's built on Africans, it's based in South Africa, and it's hosted and supported from here. So it's something that we can be really proud of, but then at the same time, from a use case perspective, it excels. It beats out competition in terms of the rate at success in terms of that verification. It's amazingly high. Now, what we can then, you know, take that conversation a bit offline and then think about mitigating that type of identity theft and identity theft happening. The only way that you can do it is to have a very high percentile of verification and continuous verification. That's the only way. Anything from a fraud perspective or from a risk perspective or from a theft perspective, I mean, the use cases that Marco mentioned now, where users are entering into, you know, public transport sections and common spaces and public spaces in South Africa with a common fear of, listen, I need to uninstall apps to just ensure that if my phone gets stolen, a simple pin lock will not allow that person to steal my money because now I've uninstalled the app. And I think that thought process and that consideration, a lot of our customers are finding value in that someone has thought about it. Someone has thought about how does that use case or that citizen or that consumer engagement looks like, not just stopping the responsibility or stopping the buck at the perimeter or at the app, but thinking about how does the actual usages look like inside our context. I think that's the only way our customers can really find a solution to address their consumer risk and that theft and that breaches that take place and the fraud that takes place.
Okay. Marco, I think you mentioned you wanted to expand on that, but I mean, you mentioned the case of the DRC mining operation that where you have a client. I mean, there must have been some specific challenges you faced on the ground in deploying the technology there. What were some of those challenges and localization issues that you had to overcome?
Well, actually, you would think so, but we didn't face a lot of challenges.
We didn't. Okay.
Again, with the simplicity of the integration. So, the mine basically already had a mobile app that they provide their employees to check your pension fund contributions and your salaries and those type of things on. And so we deployed it into that app. And HR was already using that app, so very easy integration. And then we've got localization capabilities in our technology, so we could meet them at the point of their language preference that they have. So all the on-screen prompts or everything in the app can actually adjust to your – you don't even have to configure it. We automatically adjust to what your language is on your application that you're running or your web solution. So integration was actually a breeze, and we launched the project very quickly. But I would like to touch on what Christian said. Again, what comes back to me is that localized empathy, that because we're born and bred in South Africa. So, you know, we, for instance, had to solve capturing a green book. And a green book is a paper-based document that people carry in their clothes, and it gets washed. And it's got a piece of film that's pasted over your face. So when you've got a camera and the flash goes on, the glare comes back, and those type of things. So we had to write custom models to actually capture those documents. And that's where we learned, you know, what the real problems were. We literally went into the streets and understand what the customers and the consumers are struggling with. And we do that in partnership with our customers still today, because that is the reality. Like I say, we are defending the identities of the consumer. And Christian also touched on the ethnicity challenge that you have and the bias in algorithms. So yes, it is a challenge internationally. Algorithms have racial bias in it. They've got various forms of biases, not only racial biases. And the way that we did it is we essentially developed, again, proprietary technology from day dot, because we said, listen, we need algorithms that are ethnically aware. We are deploying in South Africa and Africa. If we want to be enterprise grade and stopping identity fraud on this continent, then we have to have an algorithm that can match everyone's faces and that is inclusive. And that's what we achieved.
Guys, we're almost out of time, but before I let you go, I just want to maybe look at where we're headed with this technology. And Christian, maybe I can start with you. What are some of the future trends that you have identified in the identity verification market, and how can businesses prepare for those trends?
Yeah, so I mean, Marco touched on the word AI, I think at the onset, and the usage of generative AI models. And I mean, the context is very simple, right? 20 years ago, film production studios had spent millions and millions of dollars to create facial, you know, patterns and, you know, create images of people and try and show us on the big studio, on the big screen, how that looks. That same thing can be done by a 10-year-old girl with a cell phone right now. The concept around generative AI, utilization of deep fakes, and again, if you think about these threat actors, we're using common technology today that Marco also mentioned that's been on the dark web available for the past 5 years. You need to think about how this technology is actually being utilized in the next 5 years. We're going to see attack vectors that are being automated a lot more using these AI modeling systems that will theoretically be created from scratch, but they will still use a lot of generative AI. So we're going to see a massive influx. I mean, we know that processing capability on mobile phones, you know, at least in the general context in South Africa, is getting faster and faster and faster. You know, 10 years back, it was very normal for someone not to be able to receive a WhatsApp message. It was a very common thing. Today, it's very commonly accepted that every single person can accept a WhatsApp message. So the phone technology is increasing. That means that the attack vectors and the threat actors are actually going to be utilizing a lot more of complex methods to try and, you know, get into the process, get into the organization, get into that consumer's financial transactions and conduct whatever they want to do maliciously. There's going to be a massive uptake in those types of threat vectors in the next 5 years. I can guarantee that.
Marco, it sounds like your job is going to get a lot more complicated.
Yeah. Look, just to add what Christian is saying, what we've also observed is also phishing and vishing. We've seen quite a bit of increase in voice scams, and our customers reporting that. Because what you are seeing is threat actors are running against a wall in a certain process, and then they look for another process where there's a gap. And that gap might be that they can quickly emulate and phone someone and say, hey, I'm from organization X, give me your personal data over the phone. Or they emulate WhatsApp channels or WhatsApp bots, and people unfortunately get scammed that way. So I think we must also keep our eye on that. And that is why the way that we are trying to address it is to work actively on ways to easily deploy our technology in all of those channels as well and enable enterprises to do that. Because as much as people, so I fully agree with Christian, AI boom, the attacks have increased radically. But what we're also seeing is a lot of people are saying, oh, we're seeing these other gaps. And as identify, we're just making sure that we plug all the holes.
Great. Well, thank you for a fascinating conversation. Marco Wagner is Chief Technology Officer and co-founder at Identify. Marco, if anyone wants to learn more about Identify, what is your web address?
It's Identify, but it's II in the front and II at the back, .com.
.com, identify.com, and we'll include a link with that in the show notes. Christian Swanepoel is security architect at Cyber One Solutions. Cyber One Solutions website again, Christian, is?
www.c1-s.com.
C1-S.com. Christian, Marco, thanks so much for sharing your valuable insights on this important topic with Tech Central's audience today. It is much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Duncan. Thanks, Christian.